This is Michael from Colorado. In this episode of Chickens, Beer, Fish Clean, Baseball Cards, Muscle Flexes, Scary Stats, Strong Opinions, and Marginal Analysis is brought to you by the IVNB Patreon supporters. Go Cubs!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVNB podcast. This is our 407th episode. I almost said 70th episode. Jumping ahead. I'm real eager to get to number 500. Tonight, we're going to talk about the series the Cubs just wrapped up with the Nationals, and we're going to take a look at Addison Russell and how his sophomore season is going. We will go through a few listener comments and questions, and Andy will share a Rube Waddell story with us. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Kurt, it is nice to have you on these midweek episodes.
Oh, thanks for saying that. Appreciate it.
Is it kind of is it a shock to your system to be here twice a week?
It was at first, and now I think I've gotten used to the shock. Mostly it's make sure the kids are quietly sleeping before I can go talk about baseball more.
Yeah. I was thinking, guys, what do you guys think? I was thinking about going to 4 episodes a week. Are you guys cool with that?
Sounds good.
Sure, I'll run it by the wife. Who's totally supportive, I should add. I don't want to call her out on not being. You know, two kids, it's easier with two parents.
Yeah, we each have extremely supportive wives when it comes to IVNB. They're unsupportive of like everything else we try to do. But I'm just joking. They are the best wives, in my opinion.
No argument.
So we have John Baker Day coming up. It's July 29th. It's a little ways off, but here's the problem. It is a ways off, so I think some people might think, oh, I'll just get my tickets later, or you know, I'll decide on whether or not I'm going to do that later. That's fine, except for someone needs to order the t-shirts, and that someone would be me. And so the quicker you do it and the more accurate number we have when it comes to trying to order the t-shirts, the better. Because I don't really want to get a bunch of tons of sizes extra, knowing people will buy them late and then be left with all these shirts to get rid of and sizes and everything like that. So if you think that you might be going, you know, just decide. Right now, just come up with your decision.
Make it happen.
Yeah, but it's July 29th. And you know what? Even if you're not sure if you're going to be able to go or not, if you buy your ticket, you're still going to get the t-shirt. And we will mail that to you. And then, you know, the proceeds are all going to Cubs charities. So we're not making anything off of this. So this is a joint event with Sunranto Podcast and Danny Rocket. And we've explained it on here before, but if this is your first time listening, the 29th of July is the 2-year anniversary of the John Baker game. And so we're going to celebrate at Nisei Lounge before the Cubs Mariners game on Friday, July 29th. And John Baker will be there. And Danny Rocket's going to play the Ballad of John Baker live. And I think his full band is playing it. I'm not positive. Katie Day will be there to play by the lakeside, and you get an amazing John Baker t-shirt that Kurt designed that has John Baker pitching in full catcher's gear, except the mask, right? He's not wearing a mask.
Well, no, he's got the mask and no chest protector.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the shin guards and the helmet mask.
Right. Yeah. So there's going to be like drawings there for some things. We're still kind of working out all the details. We are going to present John Baker with a really awesome bobblehead. And it's a bobblehead of him sliding with his fist in the air like he did that night. And we can make some extra bobbleheads if you're interested in purchasing one. They're not cheap. They're like $50, but they're really cool. And I don't think there's a bobblehead out there that will be more limited edition than these. And so, yeah, who knows? I mean, like, that might be something that you could actually sell on eBay. It may be a good investment. You might want to pick up a few of them if you can. But I think I'm going to try to buy one. But they look really neat. And go to ivmv.com/JohnBaker, and you can order, you know, your T-shirt. And it's all whether you're just buying the T-shirt to have it shipped or whether you're going to the event, it's all the same purchasing process. And then I will touch base with you to find out if we need to ship it to you, if you're going to be there. And I'd like to order the T-shirts here in maybe like 2 weeks. So if in the next 2 weeks, you come to a decision, go ahead and purchase your ticket just to make it easier for us. So again, July 29th. So the Cubs went out to Washington to play the Nationals. I don't really think the Cubs had the best matchups facing Scherzer, Gonzalez, and Strasburg while sending the back end of the rotation out there, Hamill, Lackey, and Hendricks. So I guess my question to you guys is, does this series mean anything when we're thinking ahead to October baseball?
My take is not a ton. It's impossible, I think, to say no, absolutely. But I think we only have to look to last year versus the Mets. That regular season, they dominated. And then, of course, in the postseason, they did not and were eliminated. So I think as far as that goes, whatever the mental game might be, like, oh, we beat these guys X number of times, I don't think that matters. But I do think it's good for them to be in these sort of close late games, mm-hmm. Have a little adversity, play good quality teams on the road and see what you do. So I think that there's definitely positives there, but I don't think it translates directly into the postseason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I as much as I hated to see the ending of how today's game ended, I guess it ended tonight. It was so long, but just to see him go down, like, that was rough to watch, but I think it might be good medicine for them in the long run, perhaps, like you said, Kurt.
Yeah, I think that this series could actually end up helping them, like you implied, Kurt. I mean, just to have that experience of playing good teams on the road and in close games. But I was actually really glad that the Cubs, it didn't bother me that the Cubs lost to Scherzer, because I think that we have gotten kind of lucky as far as avoiding aces here in the first half of the season. It seems like that's happened a couple times. And so I think I like the idea of them facing aces and facing really good quality pitching, because especially on teams that they could potentially face in the postseason. So I was glad that they got to see both Scherzer and Strasburg in this series, because I just think that that experience will probably serve them well, even though, I mean, they handled Scherzer just fine the first time they faced him this season. But
yeah, I was going to bring that up. It might seem like they haven't done well against aces, but they actually have beat up on, you know, ace caliber pitchers a few times. You know, you mentioned the last Scherzer outing where they hit the four homers against him, but I mean, they've beat up on Greinke this season. They beat up on Cole, you know, so I mean, they have done well against some of these, you know, pitchers of this quality before this in the season.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like they got lucky. Like, they didn't have to face Kershaw, right? Seems like they avoided Kershaw.
They didn't need to.
Yeah. So I like the idea of, I think that, you know, sometimes when races are a little bit closer, and this isn't to say that the race in the Central couldn't tighten up over the rest of the season, but with a decent lead like the Cubs have right now, I think that there's really no reason to rejoice avoiding aces. That you know, if it's in September and the race is close, yeah, maybe you don't want to face aces because you'd rather have an easier game and a better chance at a win. But right now, I just think that the experience of facing good pitching is probably going to serve them better than more wins.
Yeah, and you know, the back end of the rotation starters for the Cubs didn't pitch too poorly in this series either. In fact, they pitched pretty well. And I think game one with Hendricks could have, I think that missed home run robbing attempt by Hayward was, to borrow from Pat, a turning point in the game. man, that would have been a spectacular play if Hayward made it, but it was in his glove. I mean, he had that ball, and he was so frustrated with coming up short on it that he threw his glove in disgust toward the infield afterwards. And after that, they drove in two more runs on singles off of Hendricks. I think if he comes down with that ball, maybe that inning ends up different. And then we're looking at perhaps a one earned run outing from Hendricks. So I'm just saying, like, it's good to see the Cubs rotation, you know, just pitching well from top to bottom, and these guys holding their own against the best of the best.
Yeah. And another series in which they kind of held Bryce Harper. I mean, last time it was just, they just walked him every time he came up, and this time they didn't really need to do that. And I think, didn't he only get one base hit in the entire series?
Something like that. And wasn't it fun to see him spike his bat? Yeah. Did you guys see that in this game?
I did, yeah.
I didn't see today's. I just heard.
That was fantastic. He's, you know, trying to make baseball fun again.
Yeah.
And Ryan Zimmerman must really hate playing the Cubs, because he was like, I don't even know. He just seemed like he got owned every time he came up, but it was like, oh, good, it's Zimmerman.
He did. He's been the Cubs whipping boy like crazy this season.
Mm-hmm.
So in watching this series or listening to it, do you guys have any doubt that these are the best two teams in the National League this season?
Not in my mind. I mean, today's battle was pretty epic back and forth. So when you combine the pitching with the offense, I think they are. I mean, there's other good teams, but I think they've got the whole package.
Couple in the West that might have something to say about it, but yeah, I mean, certainly playoff caliber teams.
Yeah, it was a fun series to watch, and every game was close. And this is a series loss that just doesn't really bother me that much. I mean, if the Cubs, for all the fans that would get mad about loss to the Braves, or you know, losses to a series loss to the Brewers, things like that, like, fine, that I guess that can annoy you, but I don't think that a series loss to the Nationals with three close games, I don't think that should bother us too much.
Yeah, on the road facing their top three,
right? Yeah.
But it is interesting to see the massive lead of, when you look at all of the National League, the massive win total lead start to fade away a bit, with the Nationals and Giants both with 41 wins, the Cubs at 44. So I'm not worried about it. It's just interesting to see sort of things are evening out a bit. The short-lived hot streaks that come at the early part of the season are leveling out.
Well, yeah. And so coming up, the Cubs have the at home, the Pirates for three and the Cardinals for three. The Pirates will see Arrieta and the Cardinals will see Arrieta in that series. So this could be a great opportunity for the Cubs to go on a streak here.
Oh, man. I mean, if they could really dominate in those two series, that would just... So what is it now? Like nine games, I think. A nine-game lead on the Cardinals, I believe. They're playing tonight, so it could be back to 9.5 if they lose, but... I mean, the Cubs could really, I like these head-to-head games, because the Cubs could really create a little bit of a even larger distance. And it's kind of exciting that these two series are back-to-back in Chicago. So I think it's going to be a fun weekend and early next week up on the north side. Any other comments on this series? I thought it was nice to see Almora come through in Tuesday's game.
Yeah, that was pretty clutch. And then today too, he scored the run
right
to go ahead. But yeah, it's nice to see him, and it's cool to see how excited he was too when he slid into second. He was pretty pretty jacked.
Yeah, as he was like kind of like, yeah, all jacked up. I was like, stay on the base.
No, he almost walked off the base before he called time too.
You could tell I'm used to coaching kids.
Like, oh, time,
You can tell I'm used to coaching kids, because just because somebody's like safe into a base doesn't mean we're in the clear yet. We got to stay on that base.
But he looked like a major league player, and you know,
right,
just yeah. in the few games that we've seen him, and he looks like he belongs, and he's playing like he wants to stay. I mean, I don't necessarily see that happening, but yeah, he's been good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm ready to kind of put this series behind us. I think if this series happened a year ago, right now we would probably consider that a moral victory. Like we would probably think, hey, we can't compete with, you know, a really good team. So I can't get too. I think all three of these games were winnable, and I'm just not going to get too.
Right, and you take that along with the fact that they swept them earlier this season too. I mean, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my confidence is not shaken at all.
Yep. Well, we wanted to take a little time tonight to talk about Addison Russell. As we pointed out, actually, as it was pointed out to us on last week's episode, we've spent a lot of time on specific players here on the podcast, and some guys we just haven't really talked that much about. And so we thought this week might be a good time to talk about Addison Russell. Andy's going to talk about his performance at the plate. Kurt will talk about his fielding, and I'm going to try to put a bow on it, I guess. So, Andy, as far isn't that kind of what I try to do with this podcast? It's like just an attempt to put a bow on it.
Yeah, the bow at the end.
Oh man. yeah. So you mentioned in the notes, Corey, that I don't know if you said this out loud, that Addison has played 58 games this year. And he had 61 last year. So you were talking about how it's a fitting time to kind of compare the numbers from the two seasons.
Right, yeah.
Offensively, one thing I want to just say off the top is I feel like in spite of the numbers, the basic stats don't look great. It feels like Addison has come up big for the Cubs in some clutch situations this season. And did you guys know there's a metric for that?
Yeah.
That's called clutch.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't know that. It's just called clutch. It's really creative. and you know, it uses a formula that involves win probability added and leverage index as well. And I won't go into that at all. It's not really my thing anyway, but just for interest's sake, he's rated at 1.65, his clutch rating. And Fangraphs describes great as 1.50 and excellent as 2.0. So somewhere between great and excellent as far as his clutch performance so far. And that involves, you know, how he's done in, you know, high leverage situations, aka clutch situations. So he has come through in the clutch.
Can I kind of talk about that for a second? I was actually looking at like his performance in high leverage situations.
Oh yeah, please.
So in high leverage situations, he's hitting, this was before today's game. It'll be even higher now, but he was hitting 545 in high leverage situations. 22 at bats were high leverage, and he has two home runs, two doubles and a triple, 18 RBIs and just four strikeouts. I don't put a lot of stock in that. I don't think, I think that'll even out over the course of the season, because it's not like when he's in a low leverage situation, his effort isn't there. Like, I don't think that there's any real reason for a huge difference here. And to kind of go along with that, his BABIP in high leverage situations, get this guys, 625.
Dang.
So average is around 300. So if he's, you know, if his BABIP is 625 in high leverage situations, I don't think that's entirely sustainable. I think it's actually just a lot of coincidence.
But at any rate, I mean, it does seem like he has a lot of composure in situations that could, you know, kind of shake up a player of, you know, similar age and experience to him.
It's really surprising to see that out of a 22-year-old.
Yeah, so I wanted. Yeah, I'm glad you looked into that too, Corey, because when you look at the slash line, I mean, it's kind of gloom. You know, it doesn't look great. He's at 232 batting average, 320 on base percentage, 365 slugging, and 685 OPS. average is down from 242 last season, but OBP is slightly up from 307 last season. It's at 320 right now. But still, I mean, those numbers are not great. Couple other things that just, you know, stood out to me offensively. He's taking some more walks. His base on balls percentage is 10.8%, and that's up from 8% last season. His strikeout percentage is 26.8, which is actually down from 28.5 last season. But boy, I mean, that's something that you'd really like to see go down more. And in the past, you know, he's shown the ability to, not go down on strikes so much in the minors, especially. So I think that he could get better in that department. I guess anything else I was looking at the average league average for making contact in the zone is 87%. And he is at 78.4%. And so he's below average as far as making contact in the strike zone. Some of the stuff, I don't know what to take from it, but there's just some numbers that look kind of bad.
I kind of wonder if some of the offensive downturn is partly to do to scouting, partly to do with the whole, there's some truth to the sophomore slump and that, when pitchers have a book on you, they can pitch to your weaknesses. There's got to be some of that at play.
Well, and I think some of it too could be that hitting in the ninth spot last year kind of helped him out because he had the top of the order coming back up, and so I think pitchers were a little more aggressive with him as far as like not pitching around him and giving him more to hit maybe. And to kind of go along with that. This season, when he's hitting in the eight spot, when he's placed there in the order, he's hitting 321. The highest that he's batted in the order is the sixth spot, and there he's batting 143. So his numbers just kind of like went up the lower he went into the batting order. So that's something that, you know, might be worth considering. And Andy, you talked about his numbers and the, what'd you say his batting average right now is like 230?
232.
Yeah. And I mean, it's actually, he's had a rough stretch here. I mean, in the last 15 games, he's hitting 191, 240, and his slugging is 298. And then in the last 30 games, so basically the last month or a little bit more than a month, he's hitting 208, 259, 337. So, but he had a good May. He hit 268 in May. But a couple other things I was looking at is he's been surprisingly poor at hitting lefties. I guess it didn't really stand out to me until I started looking at some of these numbers. This season he's hitting 145 off lefties. He has an OBP of 288 and he's slugging 273. So an OPS of 561 versus opposite hand pitching is not good. His OPS against righties is 732. And yes, but I mentioned the 145, he's hitting 145 off lefties. His BABIP off lefties is 176. So he's not really striking out against lefties at a higher rate. And so, even though I think it was two episodes ago, we agreed not to play a small sample size anymore. I think some of these numbers kind of are due to a smaller sample size. I mean, I don't think, similar to how I don't think a 625 BABIP against in high leverage situations is sustainable. I don't think he's going to have a 176 BABIP off of left-handed pitching the rest of the season. So I think, I think some of these numbers are going to improve for him as we continue throughout the season.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. More and more plate appearances are only going to help him. I think we should probably also note, at least for me, like this, none of this is at all a concern for his long-term projections in my mind. I think he's still going to be a great player. And none of us expect him, I think, to be like a super duper high average hitter, but I think he's still going to be a really good offensive player.
Yeah.
Better than this.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, when I try to put a bow on it, I'll try to put it into context. But so
the future coming.
Yeah, yeah. So, Kurt, do you want to talk about his defense?
Sure. Yeah, I think this has kind of come up from time to time where the big play or the spectacular play really, you know, gets us excited about him, and he continues to make those plays. And so I think anecdotally, probably a lot of Cubs fan conversations are like, man, how good is he at defense? And he really is. But over last year, his defense has actually diminished quite a bit by most metrics. And you can start with the simplest one, which is just fielding percentage, which is not the best. It's kind of like looking at batting average to figure an offensive player's. It tells you something, but not the whole picture. And that's down to 969 versus 981 last year. So that's 13th out of 15th in the National League and starting shortstops. But moving on beyond that, I mean, he does have a few more errors this year. He's got 7 versus 4. And 4 of those have been throwing errors. So throwing errors are way up. He only had one of those in the 61 games last year. And then kind of getting more into the advanced stats, his fielding runs above average, which is the defensive metric used when they calculate his overall WAR, last year was 13.4, which is really, really good. This year is down to 3.7. So that's a huge, huge drop off. And then Fangraphs also has a stat they just called DEF, D-E-F, and it takes into account...
Addison most deaf?
He is less deaf this year than he was last year. And yeah, so it's like fielding runs plus your positional adjustment. And so last year it was 17.1, and this year 6.3. And just to kind of compare that to another pretty good shortstop, Brandon Crawford last year was 17.1 and is 12.6 this year. So he was last year in the neighborhood of some of the better shortstops in the league. And this year he's just sort of, he's still above average in these numbers, but he's closer to average than he is spectacular like we saw last year. So across the board, the defensive numbers are down. And it looks to me, at least in my surface level analysis, that a lot of the mistakes are coming on the routine plays. His percentage on routine plays was 100% last year, and this year it's only 96.7, which doesn't sound like a huge difference, but it is significant. And so that's where the mistakes are happening, not on the sort of difficult to slightly difficult plays.
Yeah.
Was it in the Phillies series where he made that running catch into the outfield again? Mm-hmm. I think he's done that twice this season, where he's basically laid out in shallow left.
Yeah. But I will say, I mean, to throw something else positive, like the spectacular plays, like his ability to field the ball as he's moving away from second and then throw back across is incredible. When he sort of does that slide and pop up thing that he does, like right. That's incredible to watch. And he's certainly a spectacular, but like I said, the routine plays just have been tougher for him this year.
Yeah. It kind of sounds familiar. I mean, that sort of sounds a little bit like a player whose name starts with an S and ends right. with Harlan Castro.
Yeah.
Let's not plant that seed, Andy.
No, I, we know what he's capable of on defense. He's capable of making all the routine plays and most of the spectacular plays.
Right.
So I have no doubt that things are going to look up as far as the routine plays are concerned.
Yeah. So to attempt to put a bow on it, I think it's important to remember that Addison Russell is just 22 years old. He's the 7th youngest player in the National League. And I think while his offensive numbers aren't super impressive right now, and there's some that are kind of baffling, I guess, I think based on the offensive production of that the Cubs have as a whole, I don't think that the Cubs need Addison Russell to be more than he is right now. And I think that although his defensive numbers look a little bit down too, he's still the same defensive player. I don't think that this is like an indication that he's lost a step or anything. I mean, he's 22, so I don't think we're seeing like his skills diminish or anything. I just think it's somewhat of a coincidence. Maybe last year he kind of overperformed. I'm not sure, but I think that what he does offer in the field makes up for anything he lacks at the plate right now. And as I mean, Andy, you talked about his clutch hitting, and I mean, honestly, I still think that a lot of that stuff is just kind of coincidental. But if he pulls through like he did today and like he has several times this season, I mean, I think that's pretty valuable. And like I said, I just think that the Cubs roster is kind of constructed in a way right now that a player, a very extremely young player like Addison Russell, you can have him there kind of still developing. And it's not going to hurt the team. I don't know if I want to get into this, but what do you guys think about the idea of starting Baez over Russell at short?
Boy, I would probably stick with Russell just because I like what Baez gives you on the versatility side, you know, to continue to do what he's doing, play a lot of positions. And I think it would be a mistake to, like you've kind of said, this is a pretty, we think this is a short-lived downturn in Russell's numbers. So I think he'll turn around, and I think playing is the best way to do that.
Yeah. I don't think that they should, I don't think that Russell should be benched for Baez. I was kind of curious. Like, I think Baez is, well, what do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I like the defensive alignment with Baez at third base and Bryant in left field. Personally, I like watching Baez play third base. I think he's really good there. Yeah, and I'd say keep Russell at short.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to be clear, I'm not advocating for benching Addison Russell or anything. I don't want it to be perceived as that.
Remember that episode where Barry said that Addison needed to ride the pine.
No,
he needs to head over to head to what cheer like Jorge.
right. No, I think that Baez's versatility is so valuable, and that if you need to give basically anybody a day off, Baez can kind of fill in. So I don't see any reason to displace Addison another Russell.
Question regarding that Baez situation: do you think like it's a little bit bittersweet for Baez to he's now this new super utility guy like the new Zobrist we've all talked about? And he's so good at it. Now he is that guy. You think he's like, man, I just want to play short or second, or he just wants to, do you think he wants to be an everyday player at a position, or he's a little bit,
I don't know. I mean, I could see it going either way. I could see him thinking that he would like an everyday place, but then again, you'd have to look at this lineup and say, mm-hmm. Well, this is my best way to get playing time. And I mean, really it does nothing, but I don't know. I mean, do you think that being able to play several positions
is now his thing from this point forward?
So do you think that, okay, so say let's just say he kind of like becomes this, and this is what he is for the next, you know, until free agency. Do you think that his ability to play several positions, do you think that increases his value in free agency?
Could it hurt it?
I think it could. I mean, I think a marquee shortstop with power makes a bigger contract signing than
or
a super utility. Although this kind of position and this kind of thing is fairly new.
Right. I mean,
the utility guy used to be like a little bit washed up and
okay. So, but let's look at it this way.
It's a real position.
Right. But would Zobrist have the value that he does if he was just a second baseman? Like, I mean, that's kind of what he is right now. But let's say, you know, a couple years ago, I think he's more valuable as somebody that can play all over. And I think especially with Baez that, you know, if I'm his agent, I'm saying, hey, if you need a really good shortstop, this is your guy. But then if you need to play him all over the place, this is your guy.
So it appeals to a wider number of teams that way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So hence higher value.
I would think.
Yeah, and I mean, perhaps it's an old market way of thinking about it for me, about like, you know, the top shortstop comes on the on the market, he makes a bunch of money versus the top utility player doesn't make as much. But I think that's a changing trend because.
Well, and I think when your top utility, super utility guy can be your top shortstop or second baseman or third. I mean, if you need him to just play in one place, mm-hmm. he can do that. It's not like that guy that, you know, you don't really want him to get every day at bats. You know, it's not like that type of a utility player. It's more mm-hmm. of a, hey, you can put this guy wherever you need him. It's so that way he can be in the lineup with his bat every day.
Yeah, it'll be interesting as it becomes more common.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Quick question from the chat is kind of...
Oh, I'm sorry. For them to... Wait a minute. For us to take a question from them, they need to tip a beer in the huzzah chat. At least a hand clap.
I'm sure they would have gladly thrown a bunch of props our way. But the question is from Carrie, who asks, who's the best choice for first when Rizzo gets an off day? Do you guys like Baez, Bryant, or Coughlin?
I would say Bryant. I think that Baez might be... I don't know. I think Baez might be a little bit more athletic over there, a little quicker with the glove. But for some reason, I just kind of picture Bryant being there more.
I guess it sort of depends on who's available, too. I mean, like, this kind of changes if Listello's available, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I guess one thing Coughlin has going for him is that he's a lefty. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, either Baez or Bryant, really. I guess I haven't seen enough of either of them at first to be able to tell
right.
like who performs the routine.
I guess, you know, if I think about it, like, you know, one of the criticisms of Bryant when he was brought up was that he has a hard time, you know, kind of like on slow rollers that are down on the ground, you know, that like that just because of his height, like leaning over is a little tougher for him and stuff. And I think that Baez is probably more athletic. So Baez might be able to make those, like, you know, where Rizzo's got to do the splits out there to catch a, of course, it's usually coming from Bryant. So
guest first baseman, Corey Crawford.
Yeah, but I can just kind of picture Baez being a little quicker over there. I kind of, like, you know, imagine trying to, like, pick a guy off, either the catcher or the pitcher. I think Baez probably has a faster glove for that type of stuff. I just kind of picture him being a little bit more athletic over there.
Yeah.
By the way, since we kind of mentioned huzzah, I'm pretty impressed with it tonight. I think it's coming through for us tonight.
Yeah,
worked well tonight.
Yeah.
Knock on wood if you have it available.
Right. So we do these recordings live, and we were using Blab. We've moved over to huzzah. So if you follow us on social media, you know, Facebook, you can go to ivmv.com/Facebook to get to our Facebook page, or we are at ivmv on Twitter. Go there and we'll send the links out now. I didn't send them out on those two tonight because last week it worked for us about half the time, and then it kind of petered out on us. So I thought we'd just make sure it's working, but it seems to be working pretty well tonight. Chris in the chat asked if there's an app. I did advertise it to our Patreon Facebook page, but I'm not sure if there's an app for it. I don't know, but we'll find out. I suppose a visit to the app store would tell me, but, let's see. I real quick, I wanted to read a comment that was left on our website, and this is from Judy. She left it on a comment from an episode. I think it was a week ago. And yeah, so Judy's from Australia, and we've been getting quite a following from Australia, guys. I think we need to go down there and do a game watch or some sort of, something in Australia.
There's a lot of podcast listeners. It seems like down there. I'm sorry, Kurt.
I was going to say, like, a quick turnaround trip. We'll fly down for the night and right. Head back the next day.
Yeah, sounds fun. So this is in response to our discussion about the broadcast that we had on last week's midweek episode. Andy, I don't think you were here for that one. Judy says here, she says, who listens to game radio broadcast? I do. I'm a 71-year-old woman who listens, who lives in Australia, which I think it's amazing. We have a 71-year-old listener of our podcast. I think that is pretty incredible. So thank you for finding us, Judy. She says she was raised in the Chicago suburbs. Growing up, I listened to the Cubs on the radio. My grandmother lived in Flint. She listened to the Tigers. One of my prized possessions is a scorecard my grandmother filled out at the 1945 World Series. That's pretty awesome. So she says, I love the radio broadcast. Some mornings it starts as early as 4 a.m. here in Australia, but thanks to MLB, I have the broadcast on my iPhone. But you are right. Something has happened. The characters are still the same. It's Pat and Ron, and I think they picked Ron Coomer because he is similar to Ron Santo. Pat is a wonderful commentator. He is old school, a familiar, comforting voice, but the program has changed. It is different and is more like an infomercial and less like a baseball game. It was only this week that I was wondering who to blame for overselling the radio time. It has consequences, and I think Pat has lost the joy of broadcasting, except for the fact that our Cubbies are out there playing. Before I close, I want to mention just one more thing about your profile of a radio listener. We aren't all old guys in a garage. Don't underestimate us. I saw Moneyball. I know about sabermetrics. Don't ask me to do the calculations, but I am interested. And if the Cubs play Boston in the World Series, I want to be sharing popcorn with Theo Epstein. So, first off, I don't think that everyone that listens to the radio broadcast are old guys in their garage, mainly because the three of us listen to a lot of radio broadcasts. It's
about 50-50.
And I think it's just that it's kind of, I think based on the broadcast, it seems like that's what Pat Hughes's target demographic is. I think that's what I meant to say. And maybe I'm wrong there, but... do you guys have any comments on that or what she had to say about kind of the infomercial vibe of these broadcasts?
Well, I'm glad to be checked on that a little bit. I mean, sometimes we just fall into painting things with a little too broad a brush to take Steal Obama, an Obama phrase from a speech today. But anyway, oh man, that's terrible. I brought that up.
just plow through.
But yeah, we get into some broad generalizations sometimes, and all I'm saying is it's nice to be checked on that. I appreciate her comments.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think we're all in agreement about the overselling of the ads because it's gotten too much when, you know, after every strikeout, it's, you know, even if it's bad, it's fans won't strike out. And the sponsoring of the uniform descriptions, which is for me, one of Pat's best unique things that he did. I'm sure others do it, but for me, it was neat to hear him talk about the Blue Sox and, you know, and now to have that sponsored, it's just too much.
It's constant and it really does, you know, and we're kind of repeating ourselves here from the last episode or from that episode, but you know, if there is a strikeout, I don't want to, hear a description of what the pitch was, what the batter did. I want to hear it, you know, described a little bit better rather than going straight into an advertisement. And I kind of like, after we talked about this, I've been paying attention to it. And especially if it's after the second, if that's the third out, after they do that little fans won't strike out, whatever, they never go back and explain what happened. So I don't know. You know, as I listen on the radio, and I think all of us do, we kind of try to picture what's going on. We've watched enough TV broadcasts. I can kind of picture what has happened based on their description. And when they never go back to explain where the pitch was, what kind of a pitch it was, anything, it just really takes away from it for me. And and today I heard something that really kind of rubbed me the wrong way too on the radio broadcast. And so it was late in the game, it may have even been extra innings, and Pat said, so the Cubs were batting and the Nationals went to their bullpen, and he said, the Nationals are going to their pen, going to the bullpen. Last innings, Cubs trip to the pen was brought to you by blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that is okay. Like, when you're placing an advertisement in something that happened in the last inning, I don't know. That seemed really, it was almost like he probably forgot to do it then. And he's like contractually obligated to do it. And so he had to like throw it in. It was just really, and it's weird. Like, I don't, why wouldn't you just say like, oh, so this Nationals call to the pen or just this call to the pen, blah, 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 however they word it. But instead it was like, yeah, so last innings, Cubs call to the pen was brought to you by, and I don't know if it's quote unquote call to the pen, whatever they call it, but.
I heard him do that on the uniform descriptions part too. Like he forgot to, you know, mention that sponsor and he said it, you know, after the next commercial break, he brought it back up. Like one of the uniform descriptions were brought to you by.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, it seems like he forgets a lot. And I wonder sometimes if he forgets on purpose. But like, what if they actually just pushed all that stuff to the end of the inning, you know, or something like that, you know? So this inning, you know, we had a strikeout, you know, and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm serious. Yeah, just no, like do them all in a, so or, they don't. Or just take them out of the moment.
Or just don't do it. You know, I'm not, and I know that there are a lot of radio broadcasts that do this kind of stuff. I don't know if every single radio broadcast does it. And I sure don't think that they do it to this extent because it really has become more glaring here in the last year or so. And I mean, it could be part of the move away from WGN to WBBM for a year and then onto the Score. But, you know, there's something to keep in mind, and that is if you listen, I really dislike sports talk radio. But I listened to some this week because they were going to interview somebody I wanted to listen to. I can't even remember who it was. It might have been Joe Madden. I honestly can't remember, but it was somebody I wanted to listen to. And so they interviewed him, and then it wasn't Joe Madden. I don't remember who it was. But anyway, it was on the Score. And so when they wrapped up that conversation, there was 9 minutes of commercials after that. I counted it because like the commercials just stand out to me big time on sports talk radio. It's just so many, so long. And I wish that I would have counted how many, you know, I don't know if there were 30-second spots or 45 or a minute, 60-second. I don't know. But I wish I would have counted. But it was like, yeah, it was like 9 minutes of just advertisements. And I don't understand like why. I don't understand how that model works. I mean, obviously, I'm a big proponent of podcasting, and I think that it I don't, I have no idea. This conversation is just going everywhere. But, you know, I turn on like Boers and Bernstein, who I don't really care for that much, but I turned them on and they talked about an issue that really wasn't that interesting to me. And I don't think it wasn't even a Chicago. It was about the Baylor thing. It's not that it's not interesting. I think it's a very important issue or whatever, but they didn't really dig into it too much. And it was kind of a boring discussion of it, I thought, for about 5 minutes to start their show. And then it was like they went right into a commercial and it was like 7 minutes long. And then they came back and did something else. And they kind of like came back. I just don't like the sports talk radio format and how they structure their shows because, I mean, imagine if we did this podcast and we interrupted it like every 6 minutes for commercials. But I don't know.
This Justin, Corey's a big proponent of podcasting.
But
this rant was brought to you by.
No, I just think that so, you know, that is the revenue model that AM sports talk radio has. And so then they put on a baseball game where you can have a half inning that goes 20 or 25 minutes and they're really limited in between innings now with 2.5 minutes. So they're limited into how many commercials they can run in between innings and half innings. And so what they do is they fill our baseball games with all this garbage. And it really, and I think you can, how does Judy word it here? She says that Pat has lost the joy of broadcasting. I don't I don't know if I would say that, but I can't really disagree with that because I can hear a difference in how he calls a game. Mm-hmm. And I think for somebody that's probably old school and has been calling games for a long time and has probably been a fan of that art form for a really long time, I think that this would have to be kind of a discouraging, development in how baseball games are called.
Yeah. I kind of wonder how long he'll stick with it.
Yeah, I don't know. The travel would have to be tough, but it seems like, you know, look at Vin Scully. I mean, he's done it for a long time. I don't know. And it just,
Vin Scully sponsoring strikeout.
Right. Yeah. It just kind of seems like too, that like when this stuff like this happens, it never gets better. You know, it's not like in a year or two, we'll be like, oh man, remember when they had all those commercials and the, you know, the little brought to you buys and everything and throughout the game. Oh, it's nice. Those are gone. Like it's like the decline of society. It's like, it's not going to get better.
Now we do sound like old school guys who sit in the garage and listen to the radio.
All this reality TV and YouTube. And
this is the end of the world as we know it.
Things were better back in the 90s. So we have one more thing here. This is from Sam, who asked the question about the Madden hitting the batter or hitting the pitcher eighth. He says he has a follow-up question to our answers on why Madden does not bat the pitcher eighth. It says you mentioned it mainly had to do with Russell's development. He still batted the pitcher eighth prior to Russell being called up. I believe it has less to do with Russell's development than it does with the play of Fowler in the second half of last year and the acquisition of Hayward. Hayward historically gets on base a lot, and Fowler has shown the ability to do just the same, so there is less of a need to have a position player in the ninth spot. I think Madden liked turning the lineup over quicker for more opportunities to get runners on base for Bryant and Rizzo. Now with the high on base guys at the top of the lineup, there's not as much of a need to have the pitcher in the eighth spot. Not trying to argue, but wanted to see what you all think.
Just for clarity's sake, the comments last week about this were basically us reading what Madden said about it, and we didn't really get too much into our own thoughts. And so I do agree with a lot of what he said here, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think I was just kind of thinking about it as far as like, I guess I was in the mindset of last season with Russell there. I didn't really think about like the, you know, prior to Russell being there or I guess what other causes. I think it just kind of stood out to me that like, when you read Madden's quotes and just kind of agreeing with it, that it was a good situation for Russell. So thinking about it more along the lines of that individual player and less about just the concept as a whole. But I would agree with Sam. What do you think, Kurt?
Yeah, I think the same for me. I mean, I think what he said here makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, the personnel has changed. I mean, yeah, so before you could, the second time through the lineup, you could potentially have a Russell and then a Fowler at bat before you get to the power hitters. And then now that you have Hayward, it makes less sense. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, like part of the appeal was that it was almost like having two leadoff hitters last season, and that's kind of essentially what they have right now with Hayward and Fowler. So, yep, I would agree. So wrapping things up here, Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us?
Yeah, I do. All right, so Rube played for the Pirates at one point, and they, after a while, started getting tired of his antics, especially when they were at home in Pittsburgh. Just being at home seemed to bring out all the bad qualities of Rube's. And so they started to have him pitch almost exclusively on the road because he got into too much trouble at home. In the words of team president Barney Dreyfus, "Rube is like a boy and wants to cut up monkey shines all the time. The other night I heard of him giving some strongman exhibitions. He had a board strapped on his chest and then allowed two men to stand on him while he was bent over. He also raised a chair with the heavy man in it over his head with his left arm. All of these feats are not helping his pitching, to be sure, but you might as well try to stop the sun from shining as to break Rube of these tricks. And I kind of love that Rube wants to cut up monkey shines all the time. And I think what that means, as far as I could tell, is pulling pranks and being silly in public.
Oh, we should bring that term back.
Yeah, monkey shines.
Monkey shines, like shenanigans. Man,
there's got to be some hidden horrible thing in there that it should not be repeated.
Yeah, that's a well. You know, sun's gonna shine. Rube gonna rube. I just glanced in the chat, and I think that they're kind of I enjoy some of this. So they're kind of we went on our little rant there about advertisements in the middle of things, and he said, "This muscle flex brought to you by Duffy's. It's time for another Seat Geek scary stat of the week. Here's your Park Whiz muscle flex." touche. All right, so that does it for this midweek episode, which was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. We have a few new Patreon contributors, Michael in Cary, Illinois, and Bo in Durham, North Carolina. We also got a nice message from Bo, who is an active duty soldier. So thank you for your service, Bo, and thanks to all the military members that listen to this podcast. Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills. It's how we upgrade equipment and services, and it's how we fund our live events. If you want to support what we're doing here, go to patreon.com/IVEnvy, and in return you'll get stickers, posters, IVEnvy pint glasses. Just check out all the pledging levels. Go to patreon.com/IVEnvy. That's patreon.com/IVEnvy. Or you can go to IVEnvy, and on the right side of the page, there is a link to our Patreon campaign. And Andy, this music that I'm playing right now, this is actually you. And I mean to bring it up every once in a while, because I know that you've got other music that people could listen to. So if somebody's enjoying the tune here right now, where can people find your other stuff?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to soundcloud.com/hapless-captain, or you can go to bandcamp.com. It's haplesscaptain.bandcamp.com.
I should put a link on our website, but it's good stuff. I like it. It's mainly instrumental stuff like this, right? I think you have a couple songs with lyrics, but
it's pretty much all stuff with vocals on there now. I have a lot of new stuff I'm working on now that's probably going to be more instrumental in nature.
Cool. Sounds good. And you created all the instruments for this, right? It's all you.
Yeah, I mean, like the drums are programmed. But yeah.
Well, Andy, this is the 21st century. That's what musicians do.
Yeah, I guess so.
All the vocals are auto-tuned.
They don't actually play their own drums. the Cubs return to Wrigley for a couple of important series here. The first one is a 3-game set with the Pirates, and then a series with the Cardinals following that. In the series with the Pirates, the Cubs will send Arrieta, Lester, and Hendricks to the mound. The Pirates are kind of struggling. They're 2 games over 500. They just got swept by the Cardinals over the weekend. So let's hope the Cubs can pile on and kind of kick them while they're down. Let's hope to see a little. I want to see the Pirates kind of lose their minds a little bit like they have in the past against the Cubs. I'm up for them like losing their cool and not being able to maintain their composure.
Losing their Gatorade cool.
Right, right. So we will be back on Sunday evening to talk about these games. And until then, go Cubs. We'll be right back.